So there's a story of some legendary American football coach being asked at the end of the season by a reporter, "Coach, how'd you think the season went?" And this coach's response was, "I don't know. Come back in 15 years and we will see what type of men they have become." I'm sure you've heard that story, and honestly, it's a great answer with so much truth. However, when you really think about it though, how do we really know if we are making a positive difference in the lives of our people? Last week, we started at ground zero. Simon Turner of Movement Sports had us doing some inner work as coaches, and he reminded us of the reality that our impact on the lives of our athletes, that the impact of sports, it isn't always positive. So in the second half of our conversation, we start to really unpack some of the ways that we can measure and drive that impact. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast, brought to you by Thrive on Challenge. I'm JP Nurbin, joined by my friend and co-host Nate Sanderson. Each week in about 30 minutes, we discuss important principles and strategies of transformational leadership. At Thrive on Challenge, we help coaches to raise the standards and strengthen the relationships in their program because we know this type of culture produces better leaders, better people, and better results. To learn more about how we can help you, go to thriveonchallenge.com, where you can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter and get the coaching notes to every episode of this podcast. So Simon, one of the things I've been exploring with some coaches is the dangers around tying or connecting our identity to coaching. And I think the thing that we're struggling with is this concept, okay, it's unhealthy, but at the same time, it's kind of natural. And so that's kind of been some of the kickback that we've been, you know, having is, okay, I get that this could be challenging or this could be problematic, but at the same time, that's who I see myself as. I spend so much time coaching. It's so important to me. It's part of my calling. What would you say to that?
Well, I would just add to it. Being a coach is part of my identity. So I sympathize with that. Absolutely. But what kind of coach are you? Because coaching is something that we do. It's not something that you are, in my view, even though we're labeled as coaches. So you can be a parent, but that's different from being a father, if you get what I mean. So just having kids doesn't make you, it makes you a parent, but it only gets you that label. It doesn't mean you're going to be either good or bad as a parent. So being labeled as a coach doesn't mean you are going to be either good or bad or have negative or positive impacts on people. It doesn't say anything about that. So I would just add to it. So if you're going to say that coaching is part of my identity, then what kind of coach are you? So you mentioned being a difference maker earlier on. So are you a difference maker coach? That's a different identity, right? Now you're getting somewhere for me, because you're introducing the why. But coaching is just what you do. But if you have an identity based solely on what you do, then when that is taken away, which I've heard you guys talk about recently, you know, with a global pandemic, then you're left with nothing. Whereas if you are a difference maker coach, for example, then you have a why connected to a what. So this is why I'm doing it. This is what I do, and this is why I'm doing it. So if you have that aspect to your identity, then if the coaching is taken away for some reason, a pandemic, or you get fired, or whatever, you've still got the why. So you can fulfill the why in other ways, so your identity is not necessarily at stake.
Okay, so let's say we want to be a difference maker coach. Like, we have a clear why. We've clarified that. We've done this inner work. And we want to know if we are truly becoming the coach that we want to be. We want to be that difference maker. How do we measure that impact? I mean, I think so many people go by the rule of, well, we'll know in 10, 15 years what type of adult they become. But I don't necessarily know that that's good enough. I think we need more concrete evidence in the short term so that we know that we're on the right track.
Fantastic question, JP, and a really, really difficult one to answer, because when we're coaching, we're effectively throwing a pebble into a pond, and we don't get to see where the ripples end. Even when you can no longer see the ripples, there's still a flow-on impact occurring. It's just happening on a level that you can't currently see. So measuring that impact is really, really difficult. I think that we have some significant bias in sport about how we think about that impact, because we tend to only ask for feedback from people that have survived our coaching and made it through the pathway. We don't go back and ask for feedback from people that have left the pathway. Measuring the impact on somebody's life is really difficult. And one of the problems that sport has is that it's really difficult to isolate the difference that sport makes, because a person is being impacted on by a range of different systems at the same time. So a young person is in a sports team, they're in a school, they're in a family, they're in a wider family, they maybe have a part-time job, so they're in a workplace. So they're being impacted by all these different systems. And how do we actually isolate out the difference that we make? And I think in that context, it's quite easy to overestimate the impact that sport has on individual people. And attributing impact to sport is really, really difficult, particularly when you go beyond that initial layer, when you go beyond just the people layer and into the community. But what we do know is that sport can have, in the right context, with the right environment, can have a really positive impact on physical health, on mental well-being. And interestingly, and this is interestingly for sport, sport can have a really significant impact in what's called social capital. So the transfer of social capital from one person to another is how communities grow and transform. So social capital could come in the form of connections, networks. It can come in the form of money. It can come in the form of access to opportunities. And what's really interesting about sport is it can frequently bring people together who otherwise wouldn't come together. So, for example, if a white male coach in their 40s and 50s in a suburban middle class area, if that coach didn't coach basketball or baseball, would they have many interactions with black teenagers or Latino teenagers? I would suggest a lot less, right? You would have to have family connections, or you know, a friend of a friend, or maybe your neighbors, you know, maybe. But you wouldn't spend time with that group as much as you would if you're coaching. So what we can do is bring people together through sport, bring a wide range of people together, bring people from different backgrounds, different ethnicity. In the case of coaching, you're bringing older people together with younger people. And you can transfer the social capital from one group to the other. So, for example, a coach who introduces a teenager, maybe a graduating senior from high school, to somebody they know who has a job opportunity available. And that young person graduates your program, not going on to be a scholarship athlete. They're just going out into the world. Maybe they're going to college, and you help them with a part-time job because you happen to know somebody. You make that connection. Or a young person who's, or a family who's new to your neighborhood. I think you probably experienced this, Nate. A family that's come in that's new to your neighborhood, doesn't know anybody. And you as the coach meet the young person, meet the family, and they maybe say, oh, we're having a problem with this, or where do I go to get this? And you're like, oh, I know. What you do is you go speak to, I'll tell you what, here's the phone number of whatever. So it might be an introduction to your local church. Oh, come along, I'll be there on Sunday. And then you just open up this whole new network. Or it might be, yeah, are you looking to buy a car? I know a guy. You know, and you help them get their first car at a cheaper rate, which then enables them to take an employment opportunity far away that they might not have if you hadn't made that introduction. Or you help that kid and you just say, hey, my daughter is your age, or my nephew is your age. Why don't I introduce you? Why don't you come around for barbecue or whatever it is? And they create a friendship through that. That's a transfer of social capital. That's happening all the time in sport, and we do it without thinking about it, and it's massively valuable, especially if we increase the diversity of people taking part in sport. It's actually counterproductive if we keep it all to ourselves and only people like us are allowed in our inner circle. But if we go the other way and we get diversity in the range of people that are taking part in sport, then we get this transfer of social capital, which can be really, really powerful and have a really significant impact on somebody's life. Just a small example here with our basketball club. We had a young person in quite an unfortunate family situation. And one of the parents actually took this kid into their home. They had some broader issues, which required some professional input. This family facilitated that, enabled that. Obviously, I can't go into too many details, but just and helped this young person navigate a really complex issue. And this young person is now graduating high school and going to a basketball program in England this coming year. And this happens all the time in sport, and it's hugely powerful, and yet we don't measure it. We don't write the stories down. We don't evidence the impact that we make, but we're making it all the time.
So I have never thought of the impact of sports really in that way, around this transfer of social capital. You made a pretty strong claim there that we overestimate the impact or the positive transformational impact of sports on people's lives, and honestly, I would slightly agree with that. I do think that we sometimes really blow out of proportion. I mean, they think there's so many different things that impact a young person's life, their family, their home life, the community, the school culture. But that's just a really powerful one that I think that we could start to really be more intentional in trying to measure and to drive, which is that transfer of social capital through sports.
Yeah, and the key to it is diversity, though. Because that transfer of social capital will occur, right? So if we have a group of people from privileged and advantaged backgrounds being coached by other people from privileged and advantaged backgrounds, then they're going to keep the privilege and the advantage in that circle. So they're going to transfer social capital, but it's going to be, hey, I can get you an internship at this corporation. Because I know I golf with somebody who could help you with that. I'll help you get into college. I know somebody. I'll help you. Or do you want some help writing your statement in your application to college? Or I know somebody who's a tutor, right? So that social capital can stay inside the circle really easily. So diversity is the key. If you have more diversity within sport and you're proactive about including people, not just being welcoming, but proactive about including a wider range of people than you're currently working with, then there's all sorts of opportunities there. And then for people, or maybe somebody coaching at the other end, perhaps of the spectrum, maybe in a disadvantaged area, and they're coaching only people that are disadvantaged, what can we do to get some engagement? How can we in sport, through competition, can bring together people from different communities? And are we taking advantage of those interactions? Because for us as coaches, and also for the young people we coach, they may not have those interaction opportunities with people from that different tier or of society, or that different social class. But sport can bring them together. And then what are you going to do off the back of that? What are you going to do when the game finishes? What are you going to do with the parents there? Are you going to hold a small function that mingles parents together? Are you on the bus as soon as you possibly can? Or are you hanging around? Or if you're the host, are you inviting people to stay? Are you communicating in advance that you'd like them to stay for half an hour afterwards? Are you meeting people and mingling and bringing different groups of people together? There's so many opportunities, so many opportunities to create increased diversity, which would then lead to this kind of spreading of social capital. But that's the key. We have to do it with diversity in our programs.
So what are some other ways that we as coaches can drive some of that transfer of social capital? What are some kind of practical ways that you've seen coaches do that within their own programs?
Yeah, so first thing is we have alumni networks, and some programs utilize those, some don't. So a longitudinal tracking study, right? That's quite a fancy term that basically boils down to staying in touch with the people you used to coach, right? So where is somebody 10 years after you coach them? Keep those email addresses, keep those social media connections, follow up with people. It's pretty simple to put together some surveys, which can help you evaluate the longer term impact that you've made. It's pretty simple with a bit of research to do some well-being surveys for the people that you coach. I would strongly suggest that. That's something I personally have not done enough of, and that's something I'm going to do a whole lot more of this coming season, is actually building up some evidence around the well-being of the people that I coach, particularly benchmarking that at the beginning of the season and then doing a mid-season and late season. And trying to assess the changes in mental well-being for the people you coach. And then asking the people in the community around the people you coach. So if you're at the high school level, it's doing short interviews with three or four teachers from that high school at the end of the year, asking them what impact they think your sport program had on that young person. It's going out into the community. Are there other community leaders, youth workers, perhaps people at the church or people in the local area? Is there employers that have interacted with the young people that you coach, and specifically surveying them and asking them what impact they think sport has had on this young person? You know, we have to collect evidence. Like, I'm afraid there's no quick and easy way of doing it, JP. We have to invest a little bit of time in putting some systems in place that can help us measure that impact. You know, how a lot of coaches will do an end of season review. Does your end of season review include speaking to the other stakeholders that are involved in the young people that you coach? Are you speaking to the teachers? Are you surveying the teachers in the school, or at least getting some anecdotal feedback from them as part of your end of season review? So those are some quite simple ways that you could get started. We'd have to do a whole nother podcast, JP, on the process or the science behind measuring impact. And that I think we perhaps won't have too many listeners for that one, because it could get a little dry. But something as simple as a well-being survey and a stakeholder survey at the end of the season can go a long way.
Well, I think as we kind of bring this episode to a close, we've wandered around, you know, in a lot of different subjects, and I'm just wondering, you know, thinking of from the perspective of our audience, you know, that just kind of listened to you for the first time and some of these, you know, theories and the way that you think about coaching. And I guess what's your parting comment, you know, or what's the parting question that coaches could be wrestling with to help them, you know, as we've talked about, maybe gain a greater depth into their understanding of what it means to make a difference and be a transformational coach?
Well, Nate, I think we started with the concept of ground zero, which is me as a coach. And that's linked to Stephen Covey's three circles. So you have your circle of control. That sits inside a circle of influence, which sits inside a circle of concern. And if you map that onto coaching, you could say, well, my circle of control is me, my circle of influence is the people I coach, and my circle of concern is the community that I coach in. So if you want to have an impact, start with the circle of control, which is me. Start at ground zero. Ask yourself open questions. Ask for input from people you know and trust who will be honest with you. And when you expand, when you go through that kind of process, what you do is you expand your circle of control. So the process of self-growth is to expand your circle of control, which enables you to expand your circle of influence, whilst your circle of concern stays the same size. So those that apologies if maths is not your subject, but if you followed the maths there, you'll see that the outer circle has stayed the same size and that the two inner circles have grown. Therefore, we are having a greater impact on our circle of concern. We're taking up a greater proportion of that circle of concern by first growing our circle of control, then growing our circle of influence. All that starts with ground zero. Me as the coach.
Special thanks to Simon for coming on the podcast. What an incredible two-part series that was. You can check out more of his stuff at Movement Sports, which is MVMTSports.com. MVMTSports.com. His Twitter is at MVMT for good, and his email is Simon@MVMTSports.com. Be sure to follow his stuff there. He's got a great newsletter that I get a lot of value out of. A lot of great questions. He's always challenging me as a coach that I appreciate. So be sure to check out Simon Turner and the incredible work that he's doing.